from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Congress is back, and it's now firmly under GOP control. One of the top targets for Republicans on the Hill in 2015? Obamacare. Repeal it, say many. That may not be possible. But the Affordable Care Act is being challenged again before the Supreme Court, and Congress is lining up challenges to many individual pieces of the law. Could the president's signature legislative achievement be chipped away, gutted? And what then? This hour, On Point, Obamacare and the GOP plan of attack. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What should happen with Obamacare? Repeal, preserve, tweak, fix, leave it alone? Join us anytime online at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. New Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, even before he took the oath, before he took the position, talking with CNN's State of the Union, saying the Republican-led Congress is looking at options for how to tackle the Affordable Care Act.
We think it's a terrible piece of legislation. We're certainly going to be voting on that. If we can put either repeal or take out pieces of it, like, you know, destroying the 40-hour work week, the medical device tax, the individual mandate, all of these are highly unpopular with the American people. Now, we'll be voting on things I know he's not going to like. I hope we can put them on his desk.
Repeal it. Take out pieces of it. The Obama administration, of course, sees it differently. Vice President Biden filling in. The president was in Hawaii for the weekly address last week. And here's the vice president saying, hey, people like this. They're signing up. They think they have a right to it. Get out there and spread the word. Sign up.
Maybe most importantly, what I hear is that we have finally ended the debate in this country of whether or not health insurance is a right or a privilege. We think everyone in America has a right to have adequate health care insurance. And the Affordable Care Act gives them that right. So sign up and spread the word.
Sign up, spread the word, says the vice president. Republicans on the attack. Joining me first today from Washington is Julie Rovner, now senior correspondent for Kaiser Health News. She spent 16 years as health policy correspondent for NPR, author of Healthcare Policy and Politics A to Z. That's the waterfront. Julie Rovner, welcome back to On Point.
Nice to be here.
So we've got all kinds of ways of coming at this. What angles of attack for being pushed? Two of them by Republicans. One in Congress, maybe several in Congress. Another, the court angle. What's the more potent angle here, Julie?
I think most people who have been watching this law are most concerned about what might or might not happen at the Supreme Court. They're going to hear a case in March that actually wasn't expected to be heard until next term, but the Supreme Court decided that they would take up the case even without there being a split in the circuits, which is normally what prompts the high court to accept a case. Presumably because four justices, which is what it takes to hear a case, think that this is important enough to adjudicate this year and resolve the question. And that question hinges on whether the federal health exchange, which basically serves 37 states, can be providing these subsidies to help people afford their health insurance.
So many states, because many states did not end up stepping up to form exchanges themselves. This is what King versus Burrell. I'm reading here. People say if the court rules that these subsidies are not constitutional or not legal, it would gut Obamacare. You ask in your headline, or say the health care law could unravel. Are the stakes that high?
They really are. And this is not a constitutional case. It's important to add. This is a case of what's called statutory interpretation. There is one line in the voluminous Affordable Care Act that says that subsidies are only available in exchanges, quote, established by a state. Now, it seems to make clear in other places that that if a state does not establish an exchange, the federal government will do it for them, which, of course, is what happened. The question is whether that established by a state applies only to the state exchanges, of which at the moment there are 13. There have been a couple of states that have come in and out of doing their own exchange, or whether that applies to the federal exchange as well. If the court decides that it only applies to the state exchanges, then in those 37 states, subsidies would not be available, and that would cause all manner of real chaos in the individual insurance market. All of these people suddenly who've been getting subsidies might not be able to afford their insurance anymore. They would drop it. Presumably, the people who are sickest would keep keep their insurance because it's so important to them. Then you get into what's known as the insurance death spiral, where only the sick have insurance. This is just in the individual market, mind you. The sick have insurance. The insurance companies have to continue to raise their premiums to cover everyone because they've lost the healthy people because they can't afford their insurance anymore. And so it affects the entire individual market in those states. It also undercuts the employer mandate, which a lot of people don't realize, because the way the employer requirement is written is that employers don't actually have to cover their...
Hello, Julie, are you there? We've lost Julie for just a moment. We'll get her back talking about Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, and Republican plans to try and change, maybe repeal, maybe just chip away in big ways. Julie Robner, we just lost there out of Washington, but we've got Kim Alfano with us from Landenburg, Pennsylvania, Republican strategist, president, and CEO of Alfano Communications. Kim, thanks very much for being with us today.
Sure, Tom.
I put the question to Julie, same one to you. What's the most potent tool in the Republican toolkit at this point on Obamacare, courts or congressional action?
I would say incremental congressional action. I think that you saw yesterday McConnell has now gotten a firm hold of the Senate. He had a unanimous election. I think they've proven that they're going to be disciplined this time around, and they're going to do things that they can succeed in doing because America wants them to get something done.
So what can they succeed in doing by your lights on health care? Repeal and replace has been the big banner, but that's also to a lot of sort of realpolitik interpreters in Washington long seemed out of reach, even for a GOP with both houses of Congress.
Well, I think repeal is a stretch. I think you have to, like I said, incrementally fix things. The first thing... Sorry, my dog is going nuts over here. The first thing that they could probably take on would be the 30-hour/40-hour work week. I think most people can identify with that. I think employer mandate is something that they can take up. Things that are unpopular with the American people, I think they go and grab that low-hanging fruit as fast as they can and sort of work their way up the ladder of hard versus easy.
Let's look at that particular piece. You've got, this is the employer mandate, and it's who do they have to cover? And right now it says 30 hours a week. Eventually they're going to have to be covered. There is a debate scheduled today and a vote scheduled tomorrow in the House that would pump that up to 40. Now, we've seen dissent even within Republican ranks about whether that's a good idea. Kim, what do you see coming?
Well, again, remember how we were set up before. Things passed in the House and died in the Senate. That's not the case now. That is not the case now. So we have a much, much better opportunity to get legislation to the president, and then it's on him to decide whether he's going to veto or pass it. And then the responsibility lies squarely on his shoulders, whether he wants to make an attempt to find a compromise or not. So I think that, the dynamic, sure, there are Republicans that are against it, but there are disciplined, there are a vastly different breed of Republicans. They're not, the guys that got elected this cycle, if you look at the quality of our candidates, these are smart, strategically smart Republicans. You know, conservatives are more like Tom Cole, less like Steve King in this new election. They're very conservative, but very smart and strategically adept at getting things done. So let's see how that works out. But I think you're going to find a much smarter, much more strategically agile Republican Party this time around.
What's the argument for changing this, this piece of it that would say, well, you don't have to cover, no employer mandate, make the cutoff 40 hours instead of 30? What's the GOP argument?
Well, the GOP argument is 40 hours is a traditional work week, and employers are going to either have to cut hours dramatically for people that are working to, in order to keep them employed, or they're going to have to cut staff. And I think, when you go to work, you need a full-time job. A full-time job is 40 hours, and you want to get those 40 hours and be paid for them. If an employer has to cut you down below 30 because he can't afford to also, carry every bit of your health insurance, that's a pretty tough choice to make.
You had conservative Yuval Levin writing in the National Review in November saying that this might be worse than doing nothing, putting it to 40 hours, that you're going to have more people who get their hours cut because of that, and the GOP may end up being unpopular if it pushes this through. Fear on that front, Kim?
You're never going to split the baby. You're going to have to make some tough decisions, and you're never going to be overwhelmingly popular, but in order to make change, which is the overriding largest cry from the American people in the last election to get something done. And I think that popularity surrounding actually making some changes and standing behind actual action and results is going to be the strongest thing the Republican Party can, you know, put in its tool belt in terms of elections.
Republicans are concerned about the deficit and federal spending. I think I saw an estimate that making this change on hours per week would cost the federal treasury something like $70 billion over the next decade or so. What about that cost when you cut all those people out of the employer mandate?
I think that they're trying to find some. I'm not obviously an economist. You have a Harvard guy coming on later, which will probably be able to answer better. But they obviously are looking for revenue neutral ways to do these kinds of things. And I think you have to sit back and find out whether you want the people in the workforce to run the economy, or whether you want the government to be in charge of running the economy. And I think anybody in the world would say, it's probably better left in their own hands, and it's better left to the people to employ more folks and to get money back into the economy circulating in an actual economy versus in a government system.
Julie Robner, what's it going to cost if the employer mandate hours per week is changed from 30 to 40?
Well, according to the Congressional Budget Office, and remember, there's another fight going on about how the congressional budget, who's going to head it and how they're going to do these estimates. But last year, they said that it would cost $25.4 billion over 5 years and $73.7 billion over 10 years. And that's because the people who would not be getting employer-provided insurance, many of them would be getting federal subsidies. Some of them would be getting Medicaid. So it would cost the federal government more in that employers wouldn't be paying it. That's basically the estimate here.
Yeah, Julie, stand by. The Republicans are wading into the thicket of Obamacare. We're talking this hour about how they're headed in, what we may come out of all this with. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, and the new Congress and courts. The plan of attack, the plan of defense, and what it all means for your health care, for this nation's health care policy. Kim Alfano is with us, longtime Republican strategist at Alfano Communications. Julie Rovner's here, long health policy correspondent for NPR, now at Kaiser Health News. Here yesterday, talking with Fox News, was Republican Senator John Barrasso of Wyoming, explaining why he supports a bill on the floor this week that would, in the House, that would change the definition of full-time work week under the Affordable Care Act from 30 hours to 40.
This 30-hour work week, part of the president's health care law, it's hurt people's take-home pay. It hurts our schools. It made people that work part-time have their hours cut to less than 30 hours a week. There is bipartisan support to strip out so many parts of this health care law.
Julie Rovner, what has the impact been? I mean, the employer mandates are just coming into effect, right? So what has the impact of this looming mandate been?
Well, before the employer mandate was delayed a year, that's why it's just coming into effect now, there were anecdotal reports of people who worked around in the 30-hour week vicinity getting cut to 29 hours so that their employers wouldn't be have enough people to be affected by the mandate. The problem with moving it to 40, and this illustrates for the however many millionth time that healthcare always has unintended consequences, is that there are many, many, many more people who work around 40 hours than who work around 30 hours. So you could end up just moving the problem. So you would encourage employers to drop people below 40 hours. And even if you look, this was a study done by researchers at NYU, even if you look at people who work for employers who don't provide insurance, and that's pretty much who we're talking about here, there are twice as many people vulnerable to hours cuts who work 40 hours than there are who work 30 hours. Frankly, that's why the Democrats who wrote this law decided to do the 30 hours in the first place, because there would be that incentive for employers to cut hours would be smaller at 30 hours than it is at 40.
Kim, we've got at least 7 million plus people enrolled in plans under the law so far. 2015, early here, another 9.7 have been added to Medicaid. Is the GOP worried about alienating Americans who have, some for the first time, found secure coverage under Obamacare if they get in and start making these changes?
No. I mean, I think that you also have a lot of people who have found their premiums rise. You found a lot of people fighting, in businesses to try to and keep people employed. I mean, I think there's equally as much confusion out there among people who are supporting and people who are against, you know, Obamacare at this moment. And I think we just need to come up with very tangible, very clearly spoken alternatives, and I think that's where we're starting.
What's the big alternative vision of the GOP? Is there one? I mean, there's been a lot of talk for a long time. Obamacare is on the table and in action now. Is there a complete GOP alternative out there, or are you mixed up in this world now and will stay there?
I think, well, you have to deal with your reality. I mean, it is implemented in enough places where we have to work to, you know, address the current law. But we also, I think you'll see the party this year retreating, I think, pretty soon and coming in with their own alternative plan based on what's there. You know, that, and I think that's what I mean when I say we're going to incrementally go after different things in the plan that are the most offensive, I think, to Republicans, and then work to find where the compromises are on those. That is kind of the Republican plan at the moment. But I think you'll find, you know, answers to that as we have this whole new class of Republicans growing up here in the next months.
Kim LaFano, with that Republican perspective, please stand by right there. And Julie Rovner, with us now in the studio as well, David Cutler, professor of applied economics at Harvard. He was senior health health policy advisor to President Obama's campaign back in 2008 and involved in work on what became the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. David Cutler, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you for having me.
Harvard and Obamacare have been in headlines recently. I'll ask you about that. But what about the big picture with the Republicans in charge of both houses of Congress and this very potent case before the Supreme Court now? They'll look at it in March. What do you see emerging from this? Is there a chance that Obamacare could be gutted? That's the word I'm reading here, Jonathan Capehart using in the Washington Post.
Far and away, the biggest issue is the Supreme Court case. So were the Supreme Court to decide that the subsidies could not be paid in the federally run exchanges
because of this language in the legislation that the drafters must now regret, which is ambiguous.
Correct. Mm-hmm. In 30-something states, the subsidies would disappear, mm-hmm. assuming the states didn't respond in mm-hmm. some way. And everything we know is that the exchange markets in those states would essentially dry up. That is, everyone who's healthy, who doesn't receive a subsidy, would leave.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be left with very unhealthy individuals. The premiums would skyrocket.
The whole thing untenable.
The whole thing would be untenable.
That sets up a situation in Washington for, I don't know if gutting is the right word, it sets up a situation for a negotiation, right? I mean, isn't that what would happen? Between Republicans and Democrats, the White House and Congress?
Potentially. What's very interesting is the issue about what would the Republicans choose to do with millions of people losing mm-hmm. their insurance coverage.
Mm-hmm.
All of the Republican ideas that have come forward in the past few years, presidential campaigns and so on, don't really address the uninsured problem at all. None of the proposals that were put forward would have led to any material increase in insurance coverage,
mm-hmm.
certainly not without being willing to spend a lot of money, which the Republicans say they're unwilling to do. So it would really create a very difficult situation for everybody, obviously for the individuals who lost coverage, which would be a dreadful situation, for the states who could fix the matter with a very simple piece of legislation.
Of their own.
Of their own.
But of course, these are states which declined to set up an exchange in the first place, so they're probably unlikely.
So the question is, would they be willing to let millions of their constituents, millions of members of their states go without insurance coverage because they're unwilling to pass a two-line bill?
Mm-hmm.
And for Congress, would Congress be unwilling to address the law in that way? And I don't know what would happen, but that would be a very big issue.
Julie Rovner, game this out for us. Again, Jonathan Capehart writing here, there is a distinct possibility, he writes in the Washington Post, the Obama administration could lose this case before the Supreme Court. If that happens, what do you picture ensuing, Julie? What's the leverage going to look like? What kind of negotiation, bargaining between White House and Congress and states?
Well, I think one thing that's important to say is that most states would not be able to, in any quickly way, fix this themselves. In seven states, the governor doesn't, the legislature has taken away from the governor the authority to create an exchange. Federal funding to create exchanges, that's how most of the exchanges were created, ended as of this January 1st, because they assumed that by now all the states that wanted to create an exchange would have done it. And there are a lot of things that you have to do. It's not just a two-line bill to create a state exchange.
Which means it would be the White House talking to Congress, is what you're suggesting.
It would. Now, Congress could fix it with a two-line bill. Congress could fix it with a one-line bill, because it's really just that one line. But obviously, the Republicans in who can now control Congress aren't going to want to do that. So the question is, what will they want to do, and what would the president be willing to swallow to, you know, to ameliorate, you know, what's likely, as I said, to be chaos? It's important to remember that we're just talking about the individual insurance market here. That's not where most people have coverage, that the vast majority of people get their coverage still through their employer or through Medicare or Medicaid. Those things wouldn't be affected by this Supreme Court decision, but everybody who buys their own insurance would be affected. It would be a lot of people. The Kaiser Family Foundation did an estimate that if this were to happen in 2016, when everyone thought the court would take it up, it could impact as many as 13 million people. So it's going to be, you know, it could be a lot of people, and it could be, you know, definitely this would take effect 25 days after the Supreme Court rules, which is expected in late June, and that's pretty much when things will come to a head if this happens.
Kim Alfano, if it happens, and again, many are saying it could well happen, that will put a lot of power in the hands of John Boehner and Mitch McConnell. What do you think they'll ask for? Are they willing to offer the president that one or two lines that would fix it in return for something? Will they use it to try and bring the whole thing down?
I think that, you know, among Republicans, most would say that they're not going to bring the whole thing down. I mean, Republicans aren't cold-hearted, hard-hearted people. They don't want to crash a system just to make it. I mean, maybe there's a few in the news, but
many have said over recent years that they want to repeal Obamacare.
Yeah,
many, not a few.
Many until it's been consistently being taken up, and people are now we have a much larger number of people that are involved in the system. We want to repeal it as on its very inception, but as it's become more and more entrenched, it's hard to crash something like that and not have people hurt. Therefore, I think, like I said, they're gonna go after the things that they can that they can do incrementally that will make it a more palatable thing to have for the American people. You know, I mean, the medical device tax, the 30-hour rule, the employer mandate, the, you know, those types of things are going to have to be taken up one at a time and fixed, or else, you know, the behemoth that it's become and the tax eater that it's become is going to continue on and hurt a lot of people in the long run. So, you know, I don't think that we're the kind of Republican Party at this moment that's going to just crash it to the ground anymore. I think now the question is, let's get out what we can and go piece by piece so it's not a shock to the system.
David Cutler, if the Republicans have the leverage to get in there and demand change, could we come up here with a better plan, tweaked and fixed, a kind of a hybrid that would work, or is that Frankenstein?
I think it's a little bit of wishful thinking. The people who elected the Republican Congress were very, very clear that they hated Obamacare. They wanted it to go away. Those people are unlikely to be ameliorated by small fixes in the law. And what you're talking about are really small fixes, the medical device tax, the 30-40-hour work week. The president has said he's going to veto it, whether that happens or not. The employer mandate is a little bit bigger, but even still, it's not something that Democrats will go to the wall over. You could certainly come up with three or four or five items on which there's agreement that tinkered around the edges of the Affordable Care Act. Most everyone would agree that that was good. That will not at all appease the Republican base that hates Obamacare. And so I think within Congress, what we're likely to see is the Republicans caught between their base, which still very strongly supports repeal, and they will vote to repeal it, and understanding the president will veto it, and the sense that if you want to get anything done, what you're talking about are relatively minor changes to a a law that their base really does not like at all.
Julie, maybe this makes everybody happy in a way. In that scenario, you can keep talking repeal, even vote on it and have the president veto it, keep the issue alive, head into the 2016 elections with Obamacare rolling along, anger or, you know, high dudgeon still out there, but not a fundamental change.
Yeah, but, well, that's, but the Republican, I'm sorry.
Julie first, and then Kim, I'll come right to you.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, because one of the things that I think we haven't talked about is that there is a big political problem for the Republicans here, which is that if they do make some of these smaller things go away, that could have what I think for the Republican political machine has the unwanted effect of making the law more popular. If you take out the things that make the law unpopular and make it more popular, you're going to make it harder to repeal later. So they're kind of damned if they do and damned if they don't. They know they can't repeal the whole thing. But a lot of Republicans really don't want to, quote unquote, fix it because that would have the impact of making the law less bad in their view.
Kim, so how does it work out?
Well, I'd say the Republicans are far less cynical than you might think. You know, we can, as you said, that goes both ways. We can consistently call for the repeal and consistently say this is the way we're going to get there. But I would bet that if you polled the Republican base and asked them specifically what a repeal would look like, it would look like the things that we would start to get done. And if they see movement, that was the louder cry, I would say, across the board from Republicans. If you look at the primary results in the Republican Party, the louder cry was, we are very much of the same mind as the idealists, but we can't risk not getting anything done. So I think you have a more tempered, more ready to work, much smarter, strategically adept conservative base than you had in the past. And like I said, we don't have Michelle Bachmann running for president. We have Ted Cruz, a much smarter guy. You have, you know, we're not.
But Ted Cruz has been very firm that going hard after Obamacare is a way to win.
But he's also said, that any change is good change, and he's also said that he will, you know, he supported Mitch McConnell yesterday. He did not go against Mitch McConnell yesterday. I think you've seen a newly disciplined Republican Party. They are going to go hard on everything they can, but they are not going to sacrifice accomplishment for ideology.
This is going to be fascinating. Kim, Julie, David, please stand by. Lots of callers lined up here. Stephanie in San Marcos, Texas. Stephanie, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I am calling in because I feel like our lives have been this great case study for Obamacare.
Okay.
My husband and I were been married 21 years, and throughout our entire marriage, we've never been able to have health care because my husband has a pre-existing type 1 diabetes condition.
Yep.
And we're both self-employed, and we have always just kind of not had health care and dealt with it. And then the minute that Obamacare was available, and our state obviously did not set up its own exchange, but we got on the federal exchange. It took about a month because
okay.
of all the glitches.
Yeah.
We got on to the exchange. We got health care. So throughout all of 2014, we had health care. We paid a premium that we were able to afford. My husband and I had always heard that there's this whole group of folks that slip through the cracks that because they can't afford the premiums, but they're self-employed people. And we wondered, you know, anyway, so my husband and I, when we went to go renew our insurance for 2015, we found out that we were going to be getting a whole lot less subsidies, and our income has not necessarily gone up a lot, but our premium doubled, and also one of our children, because we have three children, one of them aged out of the state CHIP health insurance program,
right.
So we also needed to put her on there. So long story short, we couldn't afford the premiums, and we are not able to have health insurance from here on out until...
Wow. Stephanie, that's a heck of a story. That puts a lot on the table. I hope you'll stand by for just a minute here, Stephanie, from San Marcos in Texas. I want to put that in front of David Cutler, who worked on the program, Kim Alfano, Republican strategist, who's looking at GOP moves now, and Julie Rovner. This may be a case study that tells us a lot about how things will unfold. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, and how it may fare under Republican control of both houses of Congress and in the face of a major challenge that is now before the Supreme Court. They'll take it up in March. We'll get a ruling probably in June. Kim Alfano is with us, Republican strategist out of Landenburg, Pennsylvania, at Alfano Communications, celebrating his 25th year today. Congratulations, Kim. Julie Rovner is with us, senior correspondent for Kaiser Health News, along with NPR covering health policy. David Cutler is here, out of Harvard University, economist there, worked with the Obama campaign in 08 and on what became Obamacare. We've got Stephanie on the line from San Marcos, Texas, who David Cutler just put kind of a big, messy case right on the table here. Let's put it right in your lap. She and her husband had not, self-employed, hadn't had health insurance for a long, long time. He had type 1 diabetes, pre-existing. They celebrated Obamacare, hooray, and then their premiums have doubled. They can't afford it. They're back in the soup. What's going on?
So first, I feel glad that Stephanie was able to get coverage, and I feel bad that the coverage increased in price.
Your feelings are duly noted. What's she supposed to do about it? And what's the problem with Obamacare that's left her in this situation?
So two sorts of things. The first is that for many people, they will need to shop around on the exchanges in order to make sure their premiums don't go up.
You think she just hasn't looked hard?
No, I'm not. I don't know for sure, but it sounds to me like she looked around. Mm-hmm. But in most of the country, the premiums actually are increasing very slowly. And so the plan an individual may be in might have increased in price, but there are plans within the tier.
Hold it right there. Stephanie, have you looked around?
Yes. Let me let you know my second choice. Mm-hmm. I either was going to pay double my premium, and my second choice was less expensive about what I was paying before, but my deductible was $12,000 and it was out of pocket. I sat on the exchange with the exchange lady,
yeah,
and she was like, this is your only other choice is the $12,000 deductible.
$1,000. Okay. Hold it right there, Stephanie. David, this is a woman who's looked around. Yep. She's done her homework. And talk about unpalatable. Yep. Nothing looks good here.
Yep. The other issue that may be coming into play, again, I don't know all the mm-hmm. circumstances, is that Texas is a state that has chosen not to expand Medicaid. And when she mentioned her child who had gone off the CHIP program, mm-hmm. one of the important features of the expansion of Medicaid was that it would have covered many of those individuals. And unfortunately, because Texas has decided to turn down the federal money, that's putting an enormous burden on people of moderate incomes. And in other states where they've chosen, in the 28 states where they've chosen to expand the Medicaid program, it's generally much easier for those people to get coverage.
But here we are. Here's Stephanie and her family, mm-hmm. and they're in trouble under the Obamacare program. Mm-hmm. And yes, they're, you know, you can point out lots of problems that go right down to her state, Texas, mm-hmm. among them. Mm-hmm. Still, this is a pickle. Does that mean that Republicans and Democrats in Congress should be jumping in on Obamacare and changing, fixing it to address this kind of outcome?
I think it's worth looking at the kinds of outcomes that individuals have. As I say,
or do you just write her off as, not everybody's going to win here?
No, I don't think you write any individual off. As I say, what we know about most of the country is that the premium increases are very modest in the low single-digit percents.
Yep.
So what's happening here is clearly something very different where the particular plan in that particular area must have been suffering losses and then have raised the premiums. In that circumstance, there's very little that can be done in general. The subsidies could be made more generous, although there's very little appetite in Congress to do that, or Congress or the state of Texas could come back to issues about how do we address the overall cost of medical care.
Julie Rovner, what do you hear in Stephanie's story? And does this look like a place where Obamacare needs tweaks, or is this just the kind of story that Republicans will pick up and use to, drive a battering ram through?
Well, David is correct in that in most parts of the country, premiums have risen only very slightly, although it sounds like this case, the problem is not with the premium, but with the subsidy. And either the family was getting too much, or it could be that the family's not getting enough based on, you know, how the subsidy is calculated, which is complicated and, frankly, is something that probably could be tweaked. Ironically, I think they'll find out for sure when they file their taxes for this year and they have to reconcile the subsidies they got for 2014 with their actual income. But it may be if they weren't getting enough, or if right now they're calculated to be not getting enough, and if you're adding another person, that should make it easier for you to get a subsidy, not harder. So I'm a little bit surprised that adding that child who's aged out of CHIP, their subsidies are still going down enough to double their premium. That something there seems off. So I think that she may want to do a little more sort of investigating whether the subsidies they got last year were too much or whether the subsidies that are being calculated for next year are too little.
Kim Alfano, you're the GOP communications guru here. Where do Republicans go with a story like Stephanie's? What's the bottom line they're likely to take out of it, the change they're likely to push?
Well, I mean, I don't think Stephanie's is all that unique a story. And I think that you got to look to a couple of things there. One, it speaks to two things that are, like I said, the compromisable parts of the bill. One is the independent insurance mandate, and the other is having people with pre-existing conditions, and the third actually is having kids on their health care. I think that, you know, Republicans are going to be okay with the having the kids on the health care. They're going to want people to, basically, a nationalized marketplace has made it so difficult for independent people to find the kinds of insurance they want.
But it's state by state, right?
It is state by state, but it's still a mandate from the federal government. In states where, I mean, this gets you back to the King case, in states where the states have implemented it, there's more room for innovation. It's kind of that charter school, public school.
But those states declined to have their own exchanges by and large. That was the voluntary choice.
Right. But they shouldn't be then being, you know, forced into the national health care. They need to, I mean, I think that Republicans would prefer most of this kind of thing to be sent down to the states. But in terms of Stephanie, I mean, she is self-employed, but she sounds like she's in that range where it's the small business person who might want to expand, who might want to get bigger, and you get priced out of, you know, having the health care. What does she do? Does she pay the fine, or does she pay a $12,000 deductible? And that is the case for many independents on health care. I, too, am a self-employed person and deal with that. So I don't know. I think the Republicans have to, again, attack the confusion, be very clear, and say these are things that we think will help.
I've got David Cutler vigorously shaking his head against the idea of states offering more flexibility or more options, if I read your bobbing head correctly there, Professor Cutler.
What the exchanges are is they're marketplaces in which people can buy local insurance plans. The question of who organizes the exchange, whether it's the state government that does it or the federal government that does it, is immaterial here. What Stephanie and everyone else across the country who doesn't have coverage through an employer is looking at is, where can I go online to buy this? And Julie had it exactly right, which is that the puzzling thing here is that premiums haven't changed very much. So it suggests that it's in the structure of the subsidies itself, and whether last year's subsidies were off in some way or this year's calculation of subsidies are off in some way. Of course, that's a complicated way to do it, but the reason that's done is exactly so that people could get private insurance rather than public insurance. And one of the complications of that is that, therefore, it depends on the local circumstances of exactly which plans there are.
Julie Rovner, this
private insurance plans have to now have similar or expanded coverages that I can no longer or she can no longer choose to take or not take. And then the private insurance prices are also rising.
Julie, so, I'm sorry, Kim, but all this is likely to take place in the environment where tax day is going to be coming up on people. And that's where the rubber's going to meet the road in terms of penalties for not having health insurance. It's woven right into the tax system, Julie. How is that likely to play out? I mean, you know, If you don't have health insurance, what? Coming up, you're going to have to pay $95 or 1% of their income, whichever is higher. I'm looking here at a chart that shows a single person income $60,000, penalty of about $500 in that case, or $150,000, you know, $1,300, $1,400. How is the tax comeuppance likely to change the politics of this, Julie?
And, of course, for 2015, that those penalties get larger. It's $325 or 2% of your income starting this year. I think one of the really confusing things is that open enrollment, the current open enrollment where you can sign up for 2015, ends on February 15th. But most people, I think, won't have done their taxes by then. And I think one problem will be that if you do your taxes in March or early April, like most people, and you discover that you owe a fine and now you want to buy insurance, it will be too late for 2015. That tax season and open enrollment season don't overlap. A lot of experts have said that, that's something that perhaps they want to that might be looked at as a way to fix things, because then people will discover, wow, I really should get covered, but now they would have to wait until 2016 because open enrollment has closed.
Which means they'll just be up against the fine for 2015,
that's right.
I guess.
That's right. The 2014 fine and the 2015 fine, which, as I just mentioned, is larger.
Layer on layer here, and it's going to be layering on right in the middle of debate in Congress. Craig in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Craig, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
The Republicans and the Democrats should have worked together and reasoned together from the very beginning of this health care bill, but no, they're not doing their job. They politicized it, turned it into a political football, and it became all about power, money, and votes, and that they're supposed to get the best decisions for the American people, and instead of politicizing things and work together trying to solve the issues, but they don't do that, and I'm sick of it.
I hear that loud and clear, Craig, and I've got plenty of sympathy for that. Julie, I wonder, is there a path here that can you envision a path that would work for both parties and get closer to something that really works, whatever that means? But to go to Craig's point here, where we could have fixes, tweaks, a better system, and both parties somehow on board with it.
Well, you know, I've been doing healthcare so long, I remember when it actually was bipartisan. But sometime along, I think during the Clinton health plan.
Well, you must be 1,000 years old.
Yeah, I'm 1,000 years old. Both parties realized that this is a potent political issue. And I think that's made it more and more difficult to come together. There have been some bipartisan issues. There's a small issue that Congress is going to have to deal with by the end of March about how Medicare pays doctors. There was a bipartisan bill. It came out of the House Energy and Commerce Committee 51-0. That never happened. And it came out of the Senate, and, you know, they had gotten an agreement to fix this glitch in the Medicare physician payment system. Nobody heard about this bill. And then it foundered at the very end because they couldn't figure out how to pay for it. But obviously, this is something that's going to come back. They have to deal with something by the end of March, or physician fees will be cut dramatically, which neither party wants to see happen. So there are times at which there is bipartisanship on health care, but I think this has become such a high-profile issue that you really have both parties kind of dug in, and it's hard to see how they're going to come together.
David, what do you see here? I mean, the Republicans are pointing with glee to discomfort at your own university, Harvard, where faculty have said, as staff there have said, oh, we don't want to have to pay the higher, per-visit fees and so on that the university is now asking for. Is there a way through this thicket that could work for everybody, or is that just dreaming?
I think it may at the end, but it's going to get worse before it gets better. And because in addition to this issue about how much of the Affordable Care Act does one change, there's also the issue of the budget. And remember, the Republican budget proposals involve enormous cuts in Medicare and Medicaid, which the Democrats have been opposed to. And the budget resolution is going to be coming up relatively soon. So you're going to have a situation where, in all likelihood, the Republicans are going to be pushing for bigger changes in the Affordable Care Act than the president would agree to and the Democrats would agree to, enormous reductions in Medicaid, and probably even bigger reductions in Medicare at the same time as likely tax cuts for the higher income at higher income levels. And then out of that, the question is, what can arise? And the real question for the Republicans is, how much do they want to just do show, that is, put things forward for show, say, look, we'll take a reveal vote, we'll do some votes on things that can't get passed, but then we'll think about what can happen. And if they want to do that, they would find many partners. Julie noted one. There are several other areas where they could be partners. And how much does the Republican base prevent them from doing that because it's not appropriate to just settle for not a half a loaf, but a quarter or an eighth of a loaf, and punt the issues down the pike.
Let me put it to Kim. Kim, we've just got a minute here. We've got a lot on the table as a country, individually and collectively. You hear our caller in Iowa saying, come on, work together and make this right. Can you get all the political juice out of this that's been in it so far and get in there and really negotiate, compromise, make something that's optimal?
I think so. I think so because, like I said earlier, not only are people angry with Obamacare, they're also angry with a government that's impotent. And I do believe that even conservatives, the smart conservative strategists out there, will take a victory when they get one. And they will, and then it comes down to people like me to make sure it sounds really huge and to really push it because there'll be clarity. And clarity is what this whole thing has lacked from the very beginning.
But can you make Obamacare working better into a Republican victory?
No, because it wouldn't be Obamacare. It would be dismantling piece by piece. It would be doing the best with another bloated federal mandate.
Boy. Okay, stay tuned. Watch this space. This sounds like it could be a bloody operating table. The whole nation will be watching. Kim Alfano at Alfano Communications, thank you for joining us today, Kim, and congratulations. Thanks. Down there at Alfano.
Thanks.
Julie Rovner at Kaiser Health News. It's always good to have you with us, Julie. Thank you so much for your insights today.
Thank you.
And David Cutler, professor of applied economics at Harvard University. Are they still howling over there, David, or has it settled down?
Things have settled down.
Yeah, thanks. Well, watch that one, too. Thank you for joining us, David.
My pleasure. Thank
Listeners,
you.
Listeners, good luck. Thank you for being here today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.